and buying time, killing people, that's in line. Lower class and social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care. Censorship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for they bomb. They shoot, they kill, they massacre, they burn the kids. No one makes gun, trees, lie to your face, fight. Buying time, killing people next in line. Lower classes, social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care. See their shit, force a bear, fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape, they burn the kids. No more leaves, cut trees, lie to your face, fight.
Okay, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat right here on UCY.TV, the best little network on the internet. And I'm your host for the next hour. I'm a little late, I think. Just hooking up a new computer here and working some of the bugs out of it, getting some of the things worked out. So, what do we talk about today? Let's talk about the mob for a minute. Now, if you live in Canada, or most anywhere else, because all governments are corporations, which basically puts the title mob on them, but for all those countries that are been colonized by Britain, it is most definitely the mob. Now, Tuesday night, I was talking about Lloyd Axworthy, who was the ex-foreign affairs minister, who was a member of the UNPA, the United Nations Parliamentary Assembly, pushing for United Nations Parliamentary Assembly, or Parliament, which supersedes the others. Now, the thing about the way this is set up is that when these guys become cabinet ministers, when the government's hooked in or government's elected, each of those in the cabinet, and that includes, you know, top judges and whatnot, they all take an oath of secrecy for life to the Queen, which is a corporate entity. And people think when these politicians leave politics that they've left politics. Well, they may have left the legislature, but they didn't leave the business, so to speak. Okay, the parliament or the government is just the front, if you will. The real work gets done in the back room. And people think that for some oddball reason, when a politician, especially a high-level politician or a high-level justice, gets out of the business, that they're gone. They're not gone. They took an oath, a lifetime oath to the Queen. They're in the Privy Council, private. Now, you can go through, like, people are saying Harper was a good prime minister here. I don't know where anybody gets off on that. They're all puppets. They're all front men. I mean, he's the one that said it's a loss of national sovereignty at the G20 meeting. It was never televised, never reported on, but that's what he said. That's what the video says. Some people don't like it, but it's a simple reality, says Harper. The G20 meeting is a company set up by, I forgot their names right now, but we can dig them out. Basically, it's a company set up by two guys. So when they leave government, they're still in the Privy Council for life, with a lifetime oath of secrecy. Just like the freaking mob. Now, Axworthy disappears for quite some period of time. Now, all of a sudden, he's back with this new global deal to help bring refugees, help the refugees. And one of those countries is Pakistan that's involved in this, which just happens to be one of the Arab countries or the Muslim countries who have their own universal human rights. They don't recognize the UN Universal Human Rights, which is all phony anyways. But these immigrants, these migrants who are helping into our countries, believe in rights as long as they adhere to Sharia. If they don't adhere to a Sharia, they don't recognize it. And yet this is what we're pumping into our countries. Now, Harper, who they said was a conservative, a Republican, was a great prime minister. The guy was a knob. He started off as an office boy. End up as a prime minister of a country. Now he's gone. Where is he now? He's working for the largest international law firm on the freaking planet. And it's all about the internationalization of the planet through international law. Now, he's a conservative, a Republican. Jean Chrétien, who was the liberal prime minister before Harper, guess where he's working? You got it, for the very same international law firm, the biggest law firm on the planet. Right, left. Working for the same international law firm. Not just any, it's the biggest one on the planet. Joe Clark, who was a conservative prime minister, is involved in the international business as well. Because it's all about internationalizing and bringing under one roof the world government, if that's what you want to call it. So it's just like the mob, you know, you go away, you say, okay, well, I'm out of here now. I was in politics, but now I'm not. And you get a phone call. Hey, Joey, we got some work we need to get done. We need to work some stuff out. We got to push this from a different angle now. Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of out of the business now. Well, you never out of the business, my friend. You took an oath of secrecy for life. You never leave the Privy Council until you're dead. And when we call on you, son, you do what you're told to do. Just like the way the mob operates. And that's exactly what it is. It's an international mob called government. People have to come to terms with this. If you can't come to terms with it, they're going to take every damn thing you ever worked for. And, look at Beirut. Look at Lebanon. Look at Syria. That's where they're putting us. That's the position they want to put us into. They want to destroy the international or the industrial nations, which is us. And we got to put a stop to it. You know, I keep seeing things. I keep seeing, still, we're screwed now. We ain't screwed. They're the ones that are going to be screwed. Yeah, they may be the mob, but there's a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. Time we man up, boys and girls. The police take an oath to serve the Queen. Stateside, they take an oath to serve the state. Both of them are corporations. Both of them are fictional. And both of them work against, not for the people. The military takes an oath, not to the people. So all you got left is the people. That'd be us. Now, if the police and the military and the politicians and the teachers and the preachers don't want to get their acts together, well, then we're going to have to deal with them. Simple as that. I went for a drive today. I went to pick up this other computer. And a friend of mine, her friend, well, actually, she sent me a picture of this native chief. It's actually a puzzle that they'd taken a picture of up at the reserve. And they didn't get a very good picture of it. He wants to, blow it up and put it on his wall. And so we went rooting around the reserve there today and all the smoke, restaurants and gas stations. Everybody sells smokes up at the reserve anyways, pile of places. And so we finally found the right place, found the picture, took some pictures of the picture. And I was talking to the two native people working at the store, lovely people, lovely store. And I was talking to them, and I mentioned to them what the lady at the other gas station up there had told me, I don't know, 7 years ago now, maybe 6, 7 years ago, when I asked her if she knew what the plan for Whitey was, if she understood it. And she just nodded, yes. She says, how do you get that so easy? And Whitey don't seem to get nothing. It's simple. We live through it. Now it's your turn. And she's absolutely correct. So I was talking to these, a man and a woman today up at the reserve at a store we were at, where we took the picture of the picture. And, we were talking about this stuff. And I said, not only I, but other people are trying to hook up with the natives. You know, it wasn't us that trashed you. The people that trashed you are the same people that are involved in trashing us now. And they agreed with that. They also agreed that The state has taken our children just the way the state had taken their children. Just a repeat. History repeats because the same SOBs got control of it all the time, which has to end. You know, I told her the same thing. I write a lot, you know. I said, you know, this is, you're a spiritual people. And she went, yeah. And I said, but you see what's happened, even with your people and my people, their spirits have been weakened and their minds have been weakened and their spines have been weakened, of which both he and her agreed with. And if we're going to make things right and we're going to have nations that are going to survive this onslaught that is coming at us, we're going to have to get our acts together. That we're going to have to strengthen that spirit and that mind and that spine. That we're going to have to work together to make this right. They also agree that the idea that anybody in North America should be wanting for housing or clothing or food or anything else doesn't cut it, because there is no excuse for it. North America, for the population that it has to support, has more resources than we could ever use in 100 lifetimes. And yet we have people living on the street, people dying on the street because they can't get medical care. There's no excuse for this, except the evil ones have had control of our governments, our resources, our minds, our spines, and our spirits for way, way, way too long. And we have to change this. They believe that they have all the authority and we have none, and we've allowed ourselves to actually believe that, which is pretty silly when you think about it. We're still the little kids at the high school or the little kids at the public school where the teacher says, you know, if you don't do what you're told, I'll send you to the principal's office. Doom, da, doom. Ah! Fear, fear, and more fear. And they've kept that system running when you get out of school, when you go to work. You've always got somebody above you. Always somebody that can put fear into you. The guy above you put fear into you. The guy above him puts fear into him, and so on and so forth, all the way up the line. Which is ridiculous. That's not how men and women work together. That's not how boys and girls learn together. Now, it was kind of weird yesterday because over at the courthouse, Farmer George had to go to court over this obstruction charge for when they raided Michael Schmidt's milk farm. Well, it was not just a milk farm, but raiding over the milk. So George came in late for this situation. He didn't go in to pick up his warrant. So he stayed clear of this mess till it was actually going to trial, and then he came in, and they wouldn't allow George to join the trial, even though he's supposed to be in the trial. They were going to run him separate. Now, he's been to court, I think yesterday was the fourth time. And when we got there, it was just me and George and Paul and Enos. And it wasn't in the main courthouse, it was off in this other little courthouse upstairs in a very small courtroom. George wasn't on the docket. And he asked me if I would go. We didn't get there probably around 11 o'clock. George was there around 9. And they were having a break when we got there. And so we went over and looked at the other docket. No, he wasn't on the docket. And it seemed kind of strange because normally when George is in court or any of us have to go to court over there, there seems to be an inordinate number of police around. And yesterday there was one cop sitting in the courtroom. That was it. None out in the main lobbies, none nowhere. It was like vacant. This is pretty strange. So George, you know, we talked and that, and then George asked me if I would go into court and just sit in there till find out if they're going to call his name or not, because he ain't even on the docket and there's no cops around. Something's weird going on. So if they don't call him, then he'll just go home. So I went in the courtroom, was sitting there, and there's not much going on, really. A couple of minor things going on, and I'm sitting there, and then the Crown Attorney turns around, looks at me. I'm sitting there with my camera in my hand, not shooting any pictures or nothing. I'm just sitting there in the public gallery with my camera. He turns around to me, asks me if I had business in the court. And I said, no. Nope, I'm just observing stuff. And he asked me who I am. I asked him why he wants to know. Well, I'm just curious. Well, you just stay that way. So they go back to farting around with what they're doing. And then he kind of looks at me again, looks at the judge. And then the judge looks at me. And the judge says that I can't be sitting there with the camera in her court. And then I have to leave, or I have to deposit the camera somewhere. And I told her, I said, no, I don't, because I've already been through this with Superior Court Justice, and we went through all the rules and regulations, and we can have a camera. We can actually record, which I'm not doing. We can actually record it, but they just assumed we didn't take pictures. But outside these doors, it's a free-for-all. In any common area in the courthouse, it's you can do whatever the hell you want. But in the courtroom, you know, but I'm not taking pictures. I'm not even recording nothing. So I'm good. And then she starts this vice principal nonsense or principal nonsense. She says, you have to take that out of the courtroom. Or you have to leave. I said, no, I don't. Yes, you do. I said, you don't have the authority to tell me to do that. Yes, I do. I go, sorry, but no, you don't. And this went a little bit, you know, she's going to try and push her so-called authority. And then she tells this one cop that's in the courtroom to show me the way out kind of thing. And he came over and stood beside, most of the cops know us there now. They know we ain't going to bother nobody, and they know that we know what the hell we're talking about. So the cop's standing there. I'm sitting down. He looks at me, and I said, I ain't going anywhere. Now, in the past, several years back, there had been some pushing and shoving and some carrying on, but we got these guys pretty well settled down now. It's really kind of pissing the judges and the crowns off. So he's sitting there, and he's standing there beside me, and she said, you take that camera from him. So he starts reaching over to the camera. I said, you touch that. You charged with assault. You know it, and I know it. And if you touch me, well, assault times twice, I guess. I don't know. So he just stood there. He backed, pulled his hand back and stood there. And she said, I want you out of my courtroom. I said, I ain't going nowhere. I'm in the public gallery, and I got every right to be here. And I ain't taking the camera out, and you don't have the authority to do anything about it. Well, she got really pissy about it and went to stage left, like Snagglepuss, the cartoon. took off. Didn't say boo, just headed out the door. So I guess she was going to see if what she thought authority she had, whether or not she had it or not. So another cop come up, and I left the court room, and they locked the doors behind me. And, you know, we look in the court, and here's two cops in the Crown going through a book, trying to find out what authority they do or they don't have. And this went on like for about 25 minutes. Where the hell did the judge go? I ain't got nothing to do with nothing. And then the cop, the original cop that was in the courtroom, was standing beside me. He comes out. This is humorous as hell. He unlocks the door from the inside, comes outside, locks the door again from the outside. And I go, you know, that ain't real bright, you know, because like there's about 11 people in there and you've just locked them in. If there's a fire here, they may have a bit of a problem getting out. Well, I got to really throw a whiz, says the cop. All right, well, when's the judge come back? I don't know. He's supposed to be back in a few minutes. So we go outside and have a smoke, shoot the shit a bit. Me and a couple of people go back in, wait another 5-10 minutes for the judge. Finally shows up. And so still waiting to see if they're going to call George. And eventually they call George. I'm sitting there. They call George. George comes in. He ain't crossing the bar for love nor money. But see, George has got a strong spirit and a strong mind and a strong spine. You see, that's what's missing here in our nations. George actually did 165 days and got out on his 65th birthday. And this guy's running 6 freaking farms. He ain't got time to be sitting in jail. But he ain't going to bow down to this shit neither. And they held him for 165 days on basically no charge, because he wouldn't play the name game. And eventually they moved him around the province a bunch of times and tried to, you know, get him to do what they wanted, and he ain't going there. And so finally they had to let him out. I don't know if he signed his name, Bugs Bunny, or what the hell he signed it, but they had him go. But one of the important things, when he was in jail for the 165 days, when they put him in jail, he asked for a Bible. And the court said, or the jail said, we don't have a Bible. Now, this is about, Jesus, that's got to be 6-7 years ago now. And they didn't have a Bible in jail, but they could get him a Quran if he wanted a Quran, right? So we know where we're going with that shit. So anyways, I called George in. And she asked George, he's standing behind the bar, and I'm sitting off to the side of him, and she asked him to take his hat off. So he takes the hat off and sets it on the rail, and I thought, okay, now we'll see what the hell's going on here. No, we don't. She looks back at me and says, you can't have the camera here. I said, yes, I can. Well, yeah, but... I said, hell, everybody in this, every one of you people here in the court, the clerks, the Crown, you, everybody's got a cell phone, which is a recording device. So you ain't handing yours over, I ain't handing mine over, I'm not recording it anyways. I might as well be holding a book here. It's just an object. And then she's going to take one more shot at this authority nonsense. And says to the cop, and he's sitting up at the main table, says to the cop or tells me that I need to give the camera to the cop, and then after I leave, or when I'm leaving, then the cop will return it to me. Just so that she can play this game, that she won this stupid little game that was going on. I mean, this is the most childish horse shit I've ever seen in my life. So I'll explain to her, no, this ain't going to happen. Well, all I'm asking you to do is not a big deal. Just give him the camera and you'll give it back when you leave. Nope. No, that ain't going to happen. So this went on for a little bit. He never even got out of his chair. He ain't getting involved in this shit. And then so, you know, waiting for this thing to go with George, he's been there since 9 o'clock in the morning. Now it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. and still ain't going nowhere. So then she jumps out of her chair and heads left, like Snagglepuss, you know, exit stage left, because it is a stage, because it is a play, and yells something out on the way out. Well, we're going to have to wait till bail hearings are over. What bail hearings? What the hell are you talking about? So she just vacated. So we asked the cops, now, what the hell's going on? Well, I guess we're going to do bail hearings now. Well, where the hell's that going on? Well, at the other courthouse. So we traipse over to the other courthouse. I go upstairs. And here I find a bunch of cops in the hallway. And I go into that courtroom, the bail room. And it's locked. And I go, what the hell's going on? Well, the judge ain't here yet. All right. Says, how many bail hearings you got? You know, seven. Seven. Like, this could take a long time, and it's getting late. George's been hanging around here. It was 9 o'clock this morning. And George is in his 70s now. And so I told the cops, you know, I says, you know what we should do? Is what? He said, we all ought to get the hell out of here. So you've been outside today? And they said, yeah. I said, beauty, eh? It's like 28 freaking degrees or something. It's freaking beauty. So what are we doing sitting around in here? You know? And why seven anyways? Why seven bail hearings? So, I don't know. Maybe it's a lucky number. Well, at least it didn't roll 777. Be here till midnight. So I'm talking to George and Enos because Paul had to leave, which means I had to leave. So I was riding with Paul. And you know, George says, you want to hang around for this? We'll get you home, but it might not be till midnight. I says, no, I got to get out of here. So Enos is, you know, Enos, who's really got the cops on the run, strong-minded man, that boy, with a lot of will and a lot of spine. And everybody always got went through the freaking ringer over and over and over again. But so Enos says, you know, I don't like the smell of this, right? I got a bad feeling they're going to chuck George in jail. He's had him in there three or four times. He ain't crossing the bar yet. And so I haven't had a chance to get a hold of George because I was out of town all day. But I did check my messages just before I left. And because I was worried about George last night. I was worried about Enos, too. And so I there was a message there when I was leaving this morning that he obviously didn't get thrown in jail because he left me a message. But what he said, and I'm going to find this out. I got to get a hold of him hopefully after the show tonight and find out what's cooking. Because he says, you know, he says, I think we just got another really important part of the puzzle handed to us yesterday. So I'm not sure what happened after we left. I'm not even sure if they took George back into the courtroom after we left. Because after seven bail hearings, the day's about shot. So I don't know exactly what took place with George and Enos, but I'm really pleased to know they didn't throw him in jail. So we'll find out what's cooking after that. Which should be nice. You know, these guys, you know, they're in this for the long friggin' haul. And it is a long haul. We've been at this for a long, long, long time. But it's got to be done. And the people got to step up to the plate. That's all there is to it. There is nothing to fear, right? They're just a bunch of guys and gals just like you are. And you know, we're all the same in a way, only we didn't take an oath. And therefore, we're not obligated to deceive people and harm people the way they are. I think most of them were probably, I don't imagine most of them were that evil when they got involved in it. But once they got involved in it, they find they can't get out of it. But they can, but they're just weak as well. They're also fearful. Now, let me see what we can do here. I was looking through some contacts last night, and all this stuff's a little bit different than it was. There we go. I was looking at a thing, George Hunt, who I had on the show several times in the past. I think it was Christmas 2013, I think he passed away. And I was just going through some of my Skype connections last night. And there was, oh, I know why, because I phoned George's cell phone and somebody else has the number now. I just dumped that. But I was going through some of the contacts and I came across George is still in here. I probably can't find him now, right? Where the hell did he get to? But anyways, he would have, you know, you could put a little sentence on your Skype or whatever. But he, where the hell did he get to? Oh, here we go. Maybe we'll find him. But anyways, so I think it was 20, just before Christmas 2013 that George died. And George spent his whole life, like a lot of people, once he figured out something was wrong here, he went to work on it, and he basically lost his family and his friends, and because he was a conspiracy theorist now, which is even tougher back then, because it was 87 when he really got into this. And so he worked hard at it from 87 until he passed away near Christmas out here. But I was just going through and I was going to dump this because obviously I'm going to hook up with George again. Not in this lifetime, anyways. But I found it rather interesting because he would have wrote this in probably 2012. And you know, the man was on the button, and I really encourage people, if you don't know who George Hunt is, just go watch some video on YouTube or whatever. You know, he's got some very good stuff in there on the Rockefellers and Wharestone and Evelyn de Rothschild and that. He actually ran Morris Strong out of the United States, and the connections between the EPA guys and whatnot. But anyways, this is what he said. The last thing he had up on his Skype, which would I would imagine this was 2012, maybe 2013. What's George doing at this point? He's studying the insurgency topics. Libya, Syria, and Iran are victims of the NWO terrorism supplied by Europe, Britain, and the US. These rogue power elitist psychos care not for the masses. Get God's help. And he's absolutely button on. I mean, where did all these migrants come from? They were created. Why were they created? So they could use them as a mass infantry into our nations. You know, and these psychos, as George describes them, they don't even use the word psychopath anymore. They used to have two words, psychopath and sociopath. And they've, if you look in Webster's and this and that and the other thing, they basically, for all intents and purposes, dropped psychopath. and just moved it over to sociopath. But when you look through, Webster's a very good online dictionary. When you look at psychopaths or sociopaths, it means exactly the same thing. And it's about being amoral, just like Soros says when he totaled Indonesia, I think it was, financially. He agreed it was an amoral act. And did he have any remorse for all the harm he caused? Not a lick. Because if you're a psychopath or a sociopath, you're amoral. You have no moral guideposts. And these are the people that run the world. And they're mentally ill. You'd have to be mentally ill to run around dropping the number of bombs on people they do and destroying people's lives financially by, you know, inflation or interest rates or stock crashes, you know, whatever. But that's what they do. It's just a big game to them. And as George said here, they don't care about the masses. And they don't, because they don't have the capacity to do so. Because if they did have the capacity to do so, they wouldn't do what they do. Yet we run around being fearful. Now, that makes no sense. Maybe we watch too many scary movies in our lifetimes or something. Oh no, the boogeyman's coming. I'm not exactly sure how that works out, but it was nice to see that. I haven't looked up George's stuff in a long, long time. He's not with us any longer, but I was just going through trying to clean out some dead links and came across that last night. And I thought, you pretty well nailed it there, George. It's pretty simple once you know what you're looking at. We can't make any excuses for these people. There's no excuses to be made for these people. And there's no excuses to be made for us. You know, we've stuck our heads up our behinds pretty bad, or stuck our heads in the sand, because we don't want to know. We don't want to know everything bad that's going on. I get people say, I want to know nothing. I just want to enjoy my life. Well, how do you enjoy your life when you're being jacked around like that all the time and you're just fearful all the time? I don't know how anybody would consider that enjoyable. Now, this is all about fear. And the police are all international police now. Just look up international police chiefs. Okay, just look that up. Google that up, and you'll find that the police have been internationalized. And they're off the deep end. Here I have a story. Video shows Hamilton police officers zip-tie arrest of journalists covering a watered down crash. Now, a little girl got hit by a car, and there was somebody there from the news media who thought he would shoot some video about the situation. And car and died later in the hospital. Now, the guy that ran, that hit her, he wasn't drunk, he wasn't stoned, he wasn't nothing. So Global TV cameraman Jeremy Cohen, and I don't really have any use for the media, because the guy that's being zip-tied here knows full well, or he should know full well, what's actually going on in the world. Anyways, the Global TV cameraman and a freelance photographer were arrested and chucked on the ground, cops jumping on them because they were doing what they have every right to do, and that's film the accident scene. And according to the chief there says that he's a little concerned about that, and he's going to look into it. All right, and who polices the police? The police. And there you go. Right? That is the truth. The police, police, the police. So the chief's going, oh, that's kind of bad. So, yeah, I'll look into that. But nothing will ever come of it. Meanwhile, over in Calgary, Alberta, we have the Calgary police policy on lethal force under scrutiny by a retired judge after 10 officer-involved shootings. Of the 10 officer-involved shootings, 5 were fatal. Calgary also saw a spike in the number of investigations by the Alberta Serious Incident Response Team. Here's this. Calgary police, this is bad news, man. Calgary police have shot so many people this year, even the chief wants an independent review. Now, the independent review, of course, isn't going to go anywhere. They'll come up with recommendations, which is what they always do. Nobody ever gets held accountable. Why do they not get held accountable? Because their job is to protect the corporation, which is the state. That's what they took the oath to. So they don't get thrown under the bus. They're not held responsible. Right, they're not held responsible. When a cop really gets into deep shit, they'll if there's nowhere for them to move, and the evidence is overwhelming, and the media and the public opinion is so detrimental to what's going on in the police, they'll likely retire that particular cop. So now he's not liable anymore. That's what they do. After a knife-wielding woman became the 10th person shot and the 5th killed by Calgary police this year, Chief Roger Chavin called for an independent probe to investigate why there have been so many police shootings. Well, you're the chief, asshole. Figure it out. This is not about any one particular shooting. However, I'm compelled to ensure our members have the correct leadership, policy, procedures, and equipment, as well as training to ensure that we are policing the community in the safest, most contemporary way possible, given the changing nature of criminality in this city. Chapin said Tuesday before bringing the proposal to the Calgary Police Commission. The chief described the number of police shootings this year as an unsettling trend for the public and for the officers who said are increasingly being forced into chaotic situations driven by the presence of drugs, including opiates and methamphetamine. The chief addressed media after police oversight body, the Serious Incident Response Team, short as CERT, launched its 10th investigation this year into a police shooting in Calgary. Now, why do we have so many drugs on the street? Where'd all the opiates come from? Where'd all this stuff come from? Oh, prescriptions, right. Yes, prescription drugs. And, you know, why? Oh, it's order out of chaos, right? Well, Chavin didn't speak to the details of the latest shooting, CERT, which investigates incidents involving police that result in serious injury or death. He said the shooting took place in the 1700 block of 11th Avenue. I know where that is. He used to live in Calgary. When officers responded to a call from a resident in the block, they saw a woman farther down the street acting erratically and banging on a car window and doors of apartment buildings, carrying a knife in each hand. Photos shared by a CERT on social media showed 2 long blades recovered at the scene. A CERT said a confrontation occurred between an officer and the woman, which resulted in one officer firing her weapon. The 27-year-old woman was transported to hospital, where she was pronounced dead. Chavin said the officer involved in the incident have his full and complete support. The female officer who fired her weapon is a 1-year member of the force. And so therefore, you got to give her some leeway, right? Now, I mean, I had a guy in Florida with a massive hunting knife in my face, and I didn't have a gun, so I couldn't shoot him. And he was threatening me, and he was a Vietnam vet, so I figured, you know, how to use a knife. And that situation, and he was pretty ripped at the time on some probably pharmaceutical drugs, and in a very kind of badass mood. And I managed to solve the situation. But you see, you put these incompetent assholes on the street with a gun who think they have this authority, then this is what you end up with. People being shot and killed. But then you see, you're just a human. So you're just not really worth anything. You know, they'll shoot a porcupine in a tree, right? They'll shoot a groundhog. They'll shoot a cat or a dog, which are all animals, which is what a human is, an animal. And so they shoot you. They always have a reason. I mean, this lady was only on the force for a year. I mean, what do you want? You know? Give the lady a break, huh? I mean, yeah, okay, she killed somebody, but come on, give her a break. She'll be on the force for a year. And then if push comes to shove, and in any of these cases where they do start to get charges looking like they're coming on the cop, all of a sudden they have post-traumatic syndrome, or they were suffering from depression at the time, or they're having family problems, or the sergeant raped somebody or something, and therefore that is all reason why this shooting took place. Not that you had an incompetent a-hole with a gun that should have never had a gun, who is not trained in how to defuse a situation. Put it down, or I'll shoot. Well, I just shot you. That's not defusing the situation. That's called murdering somebody that you didn't have to murder. But being a policeman and taking an oath to serve and serve the corporation. That's all they did, you know, just close another account, that's all. Because that's all the lady who was shot and killed is an account, a corporate freaking account. Just close the account. But I've seen this over and over and over and over and over and over again, where a cop looks like he's going to get himself into trouble here. They either get retired out of there, or they come up with all of this nonsense, you know, depression, post-traumatic stress, mental disorder. Well, if you have all these things, what are you walking around with a gun for, is the question. You know, these people use the same excuses over and over and over again. Now, if you use that excuse in a court, say you shot a cop, then I don't recommend you shoot a cop. I don't recommend you shoot anybody. But should you be in a situation where you're surrounded by three or four cops who are tattooed to the asshole that look like a lot meaner than a lot of the bikers ever did, and you're feeling threatened, and you up and shoot one or two of them, well, you're going to court, friend, because you shot a cop. And if you go to court and say, well, you know, his wife left him, he's having a hard time, and or, you know, something happened to him years ago, and he's just kind of paranoid of uniforms, and he's suffering post-traumatic stress because of this or that or the other thing, do you think that's going to hold water in court a lot? Not a chance, man. This guy's going down the river big time. But if you're uniformed, it works for you. Because why? Because you took an oath to serve. You're part of the mob. You're part of the mob, the corporate mob. Okay, your job is what do they call those guys? The heavies, whatever. Right? They protect the goings-on of the uppers. And that's their job. Anybody that for 1 second thinks that the police are there to serve the good men and women of our nations, you better pull your head out of the sand. Now, I'm not saying that every cop is a bad cop. I am saying that every cop takes an oath to serve the corporation, though. And they all protect one another, right? And that's more than obvious. Now, at the same token, you know, we go to the courthouse yesterday and, you know, even though I've been assaulted there several times, that's all past now. Right? That's all past. They get it now. The cops know we're not the problem. The system's a problem, but they're getting a hell of a good paycheck for doing what they do. You know, it's the same as the cop that said when it ran in 2007 election, when he signed my candidacy papers, or whatever they call that, that he said he was signing because he believed I had it in me to make this a better place and in turn a better country. Yet he's still a cop. He knows what the problems are. He knows how this system works. But Jesus, he's getting a hell of a good paycheck. You know, these guys are getting 100 grand plus a year to drive around the car and write some tickets and shit. And when they're in the courthouse, if the judge says, throw them out, they'll throw them out. You know, because they ain't going to get a job like that anywhere else. But they know, and they're getting to know more every day. And it's important that we work with these people. Because once they're out of uniform, they're basically us. Once they put the uniform on, they're a whole different creature. But we got to work with the men and women in uniform, be it military and or police uniforms. We have got to work with these people and get them on side. Better have them on our side than the other side when the push comes to shove. We need these people to, you know, jump onto the right side. And I think a great majority of them will when the time comes. But we got to talk to these people as much as possible. Like, it's funny, you know. I got to run in the courthouse over there now. Pretty much everybody knows who I am. And where at one point it was more of a, you know, he versus us kind of thing. But that's kind of dissipated now. It's a whole new ball game. So, you know, there's no need to be angry. Although I did used to put up a banner that said anger is a gift. And that used to freak people out a little bit. And I said, no, you got to get it in the right context. I'm angry.
Selling lies and buying time, killing people next in line, lower class of social slime, they don't matter, genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care, Caesarship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for they bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre.